This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from Fantasy Football Scout as we look ahead to Fantasy Premier League Game Week 33. This time around, I'm joined by Tom Hadley, who is currently in top spot out of 10.8 million managers in FPL. Tom, welcome. How are you?
Hi, okay. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's nice to have a break from fantasy for a week, so yeah. You know,
I've been in the top 1,000 once, I think, a couple of times in a season, but I've never been top, so I can't even imagine what it must be like. Are you feeling any pressure at the moment, or because it's unusual, isn't it, to be top of FPL?
Yeah, I mean, I try and switch off in the week mainly, but as soon as the weekend approaches, yeah, pressure's on. I feel like, you know, obviously, it's plausible to slip up and go down a couple of places. And obviously you immediately think, oh, I'm not going to make it back up again if I do that. But I've got to think, I've only been first for a couple of weeks. I've been out of first for weeks and I managed to get first. So it's feasible that if I did drop out, I could get back anyway. So
yeah, because you're sort of in and around it. Are you finding at the moment as well, we'll come to look at your team in a sec, but are you finding at the moment that a lot of your sort of rivals in the top 10, they've got very similar players at the moment?
Yeah. There's, I'd say, about seven of the players in my team are owned by the bulk of the top 10. So it's those four players, basically, or whatever sort of swings go your way with bench that changes it. And captaincy is generally similar. Last week it was half of them maybe captained Salah, and then the other, you know, he had a couple of Haalands and a couple of Palmers. So it was like, that was one of the main dangers, really, that last week. But it's the triple Arsenal that's very popular at the minute. And personally, I haven't got triple Arsenal, so it's kind of, that's the worrying for me, trying to think about that.
But I guess with so many other players behind you with similar players, that puts you in the driving seat. It's up to them to try and differentiate from you, because you don't have to differentiate from them as such, because you're already ahead of them.
Well, yeah. And at the end of the day, regardless of people's teams, you've still got to pick the best players, haven't you? Depending on... I mean, it is one strategy just to be similar to everyone, and it's harder to catch up. But at the same time, it's harder to break away, you know, if you've all got the same teams, I don't get any gains or whatever. So all it would take is a captaincy. Yep. And, you know, that I'd rather still play my own game and bear in mind what the other managers have got, but also make decisions entirely based off my own team.
So I was just having a look at the standings. There's an 11-point gap between you and second as well. So as you said, one captaincy call. And then that's it. You're back in second again. And and so on. But yeah, so tough times. Let's have a look at your career history, because I would say you've got a career history that's similar to most managers, in that you've got some quite low, poor ranks, but you've got some good ones as well. So you're not a stranger to doing well. You've got two top 50K finishes, another in the top 100K. So you've had some strong finishes. But what is it about this season that's different from any other season? How come you're first? I think most people watching this will think, well, my career's a bit like that. How can I get to be first?
Well, it just shows, doesn't it? It can happen to anyone. Mm. I've learned quite a lot this season on how to adapt and how to make different decisions to what I'd normally do. Obviously, I've had some respectful finishes in the past, but this season, obviously, you can't be first in the world without some fortune on the, you know, on the way. Like, I've had some lucky transfers, lucky breaks, players that haven't got injured, or players that I've not got have not done well, or, you know, little swings like that. But I think I don't know. I've been quite sensible with my decisions, and I must have been if I've stayed in that top 100 since, you know, beyond half the season. It was just kind of plugging along. I never necessarily aspired to be first. I just wanted a good finish. And I don't base my decisions off what everyone else is doing, apart from maybe captaincy. I think captaincy is one of those things where I'd rather be safe with the captaincy. A lot of my decisions this year, I've just kind of gone for the obvious choice every time, rather than try be dead smart and, you know, catch a favourable swing. But it's with the rest of the team, I've been patient and making sure that, you know, I know that these players can perform. They might not perform for a couple of weeks, but the points will come along, and they sometimes come when you don't expect it. They might blank at home to Sheffield United, and then away at City the next week, they might score, you know. So it's trust in the players for a start, at least, and then knowing when to act.
Is there an example of any particular players you can think of this season so far that you've kept patience with and they've really helped you out?
Yeah, there's a few. I think I have a big soft spot for Son, because obviously everyone has had him for quite a while, but there was a stage in the season where he had quite a few nice games in a row, and I think he got three blanks ahead of some hard fixtures. Away at City was the next game, and like every single manager sold him in the top, you know, like top, and then he got me 10 points that week.
Wow.
And then because it all sold, it was hard to get him back, and 2 weeks later he got 17 points against Newcastle. So I knew he had it in him, but he actually scored better in the harder fixtures than the easy ones. So that, I was happy with that. And I think Douglas Luiz as well was a good one for me. You know, I mentioned that when Hwang played Sheffield United at home, I think every single person in the game seemed to transfer him in. And I could have done that myself. I could have taken Luiz out, done a dead easy move to that, but I needed to solve problems in my team first. And I kept faith with Luiz. It was a problem because he had Forest at home and he scored twice. So, and Hwang blanked against Sheffield United. So it was like, that was a big win for me, that one.
So is there, I mean, as well as that patience with those players as well, I mean, I've often found when I've spoken to people like you in a very high position or in first place, there's a couple of times where they've taken a risk as well. So I'm presuming it's not just the risk as in like just hanging on to a player. Are there any other times where you've taken a risk? You said you're not that risky with the captaincy, but is there anything else that you've done that's sort of got you into first through a bit of risk taking?
Well, there's so many good players that everyone wants. You can't fit them all in. So there's always going to be those players that are highly owned that you don't have, and it's trying to time it well. I remember I really laid off Solanke for a while before the double in 28, and you know, it seemed like everyone owned him before that, but I kept off him and only bought him for that week, and he had Burnley away before it, and he blanked. So that was a good little win for me. And the big one was Haaland. That was a big risk. I took him out in game week 28 ahead of Liverpool and Arsenal fixtures.
Yeah.
And Villa as well. And it was mainly part of my plans to get Salah in. I needed to drop someone. And it meant that I could get Salah straight after the blank. And yeah, Haaland blanked three games. Well, he blanked in those two big ones and then was dropped against, benched against Villa. And I had Foden, who scored the hat-trick. So it was like, for that game, when it got down to that City game, it was Foden versus Haaland for my team. That was a difference in, you know, everyone's teams. And, I got lucky with that, but it paid off.
And yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the... Well, I've got up on your screen at the moment, just the last 10 weeks, just to show how long you've been number one for the last couple of weeks there. But you've also been second and third. You've been second in game week 26. So that seems to be a pivotal one. Game week 25, where you were 10th, and then you in sort of 20-something in 23.
That was when Douglas Luiz scored twice.
Yeah, I was going to say that was that sort of playing patience. But it shows you once you can get up to these top ranks, really, it's just that one or two players can really help you out and keep you going there. I mean, all campaigns are different. You've been at this for 8-9 seasons now. I've been doing it for a bit longer, and they're all different. There's always something, but various similarities arise. Obviously, you know, there's big premium players or something, but sometimes formations change. But what do you think has been the sort of themes for this season that sort of helped you to take that top spot? What sort of themes for success?
Well, I'm always trying to look for the trends in the season. Like, you've got to be on trend very early on. You've got to grasp the campaign, like you said. And I think this season it just seems like no team can keep a clean sheet. The defenders the value in defence over the past few years have been quite good. You know, you've been having like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's been racking up 200 points. And I think apart from Arsenal this season, the defenders, it's kind of been keep it cheap, keep them quite attacking potential. I think that's been a big theme with how I've been making my decisions. I've tried, you know, clean sheets as a bonus. I've really struggled with that keeper position. I made the decision quite early on to not make keeper transfers if possible since my wild card in game week 7, because I just feel like, unless I've got a transfer to burn, it's kind of a waste. So, yeah, I've had Leno in since week 7 and Areola as well. And it's been frustrating because I know he's had some good points, but he's been one of them where I just can't trust him. And it has been a problem. And I've stuck by it and tried to just focus elsewhere and got away with it somehow.
And looking at game week 33 and beyond, I'll put your team up in the moment, and I will stress to people you've put a cheeky captaincy in, as in it's not your captaincy, but we'll have to keep something secret because you've got these rivals going for it. You could win FPL, and so you don't want to reveal everything, but I suppose you can give your general views. But I was just thinking in terms of the chips going forward, you've got your wild cards and bench boosts remaining. So I'm guessing, and I don't think this will be giving too much away, I'm assuming you might be using your wild card in 35 to take advantage of Chelsea and Spurs double game week, and also to stock up for a bench boost in 37 when many more teams double. Would I be right then?
Yeah, I think it doesn't take a genius to figure that one.
No, I'm not a genius.
It's kind of been leading up to that for a while. And it was obviously make the decision whether or not a bench boost in 34 or 37. But it seems quite convenient, you know, with the wild card I've still got. And I mean, I've not kept the wild card deliberately for that. I've just never had a reason to use it. And now it's just, I've got it there. So I may as well plan for that.
Okay.
Because I free hit in 29. That was always going to happen. Mm-hmm. I've not really thought too much about the wild card yet. I'm going to try and get these couple of weeks out of the way. Mm-hmm. And then someone's having fun out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm also wildcarding in 35, so it's my chance to get some advice from you. So we've got, in game week 37, we've got Chelsea, Tottenham, City, Brighton, Manchester United and Newcastle doubling. Game week 35, Spurs and Chelsea double as well. And I'm looking at a lot of those players, those teams, and thinking, well, I'm not sure I want to treble up on some of them. I'm not sure I want three Chelsea, that type of thing. So I'm sort of struggling to fill some of the spaces. But what sort of players are you looking at, or sort of teams you're looking to target for that wild card in 35?
Well, I think it's importantly worth noting that it's easy to get blindsided by doubles, especially like the Chelsea and the Spurs one. And, you know, I've not looked into it loads, but I try not to get completely like against the single game weeks, because there's some really good single game weeks there as well. I think you'll end up being stuck with players that you might not necessarily want. But I think obviously City with their double, they're going to be, well, City, any game for City is good. So two games for City is even better. I think I looked at you're kind of looking at the build up to the doubles, and you're looking also at 38 and see which teams have, you know, quite nice fixtures around there. And there's a few. Obviously Newcastle is one of those, I think. My main goal will be to set up that 37 team in my wild card, that with the bonus of the extra game. I think everyone's going to hold Son and Palmer. The defences for those two teams are not great.
No.
I'll be a judge, because Spurs' double in 35 is pretty awful, and the game, I think they've got a bad 36 as well.
Yeah, they got Liverpool in 36.
Yeah, so I'd be very wary with, especially their defenders. But obviously, you've got a bench for a reason. I'll juggle it about. Obviously, when I make the wild card, I'll try and make it so I don't have to make changes to it straight away. You know, you don't want to put players in that you're going to have to immediately take out, because things can happen, and you might need those transfers for something else. So I'm going to make the wild card with the intention of keeping that team.
No, that's good advice, because I think a lot of us who are wildcarding then will be tempted to go, oh, Spurs and Chelsea, stock up on them, and then plan some moves in and then get injuries, and those plan moves don't happen.
You find yourself taking hits,
and you end up, as the phrase goes, wasting your wild card.
I mean, it's strange, isn't it, playing your wild card so close to the end of the season, but it comes with perks. Obviously, one of the perks is you can kind of dead-end your team before it. So you can make some interesting moves for the double right before it as well. So I'll be looking at that too, because that is a bonus. If people haven't got the wild card, they're going to have to figure out how to either free hit or juggle around it.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a look at your bus team for game week 33. Controversially, you got Leno as your captain. So we stress that you are not going to be captaining Leno. But no. You're sort of keeping something. You've probably got some players in mind, but you haven't come to a decision.
Well, it's a toss-up, isn't it, really, the captaincy this week?
Yeah. So do you want to just run through your team? I don't know if you've got it up on your screen. Just run through your team, just mainly for the benefit of those listening to the audio version.
Yeah, so it's Leno in goal, and then we've got Aitnori, Van Dijk and Gabriel in defence. We've got Salah, Son, Palmer and Foden midfield. Then Nunes, Haaland and Solanke up front.
Okay.
And then the bench is Areola, Sarabia, Zabani and Doherty.
Okay, so that's well set up for game week 34. You got one or two transfers this week?
One transfer, no money left.
Okay, are you gonna potentially save it?
Potentially, yeah. I need to see what the status with Foden is, because he got a knock last night. And Aitnori as well. But he's not a big deal to get rid of. I think he's hopefully not a long-term thing. I am worried about Arsenal, though, having just the defender in. I need to figure out whether or not I get them in now or wait for the double, because I can't really go into that double with just one Arsenal.
No, I guess, yes, for those looking at your team who are in a similar position, well, they won't be in a similar position because they won't be first, but a similar position in that they may be just using transfers for Game Week 34, but are quite well stocked up. And yeah, I mean, I would look at that team and exactly what you were thinking. I was thinking, yeah, you could probably need more Arsenal because Arsenal are playing Wolves and Chelsea, which is pretty good fixtures for attackers and defenders in Game Week 34. Yeah. So yeah, Saka, Havertz, Odegaard, another defender, Ben White, Saliba. But yeah, without money in the bank, so there might be something. I guess it might be something that you could make in two moves in 34 instead.
And I've been weighing up. Obviously, a hit is never out of the question. I'm not afraid of taking it if I need to, and I've got that buffer as well on second. I don't want to make it too small, but I have got that. So it depends. It all depends on figuring out which strategy I want to take, whether or not a bit more conservative or a bit more aggressive.
Okay. Yeah. We mentioned the captaincy. Obviously, you're not captaining Leno, but in terms of, you've got Haaland, potentially Foden, Palmer at home to Everton, Salah and Darwin, indeed, at home to Crystal Palace. There's no shortage of options this week. It's quite a rare week where there's not like just one standout. There's three or four.
Wish there was just one standout.
Maybe Son away to Newcastle looks quite good as well. Where are you sort of... What sort of player would you be leaning towards? Because so a more conservative manager might just think, right, Salah or Haaland, they're reliable over the years. But one that's adapted perhaps more to this season might think, well, hang on a minute, Palmer could be the better one.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I've always been quite conservative in my captaincy, and I think I will stay conservative. At the end of the day, it's going to be a toss-up, I think, between the main two, Salah and Haaland. I'm going to try and see what Pep says in his conference as well. You know, Foden's not a bad shout as well. I think midfielders, people say, like, obviously, because they get more points for a goal, midfielders, captaincy, it's like a slight edge. Obviously, Haaland, with the bonus point system, it comes and goes, because if he misses chances, he's not going to get it. But you'd think at home to Luton, we saw what he did in the cup.
Yep.
So, and he didn't play him away. So he's only played him once a season in the cup, and he scored five. So
I think that hopefully that'll
be quite a scary prospect if he is playing, not to catch him.
Indeed. Just before we go, just a couple more questions about. I just find it interesting about being number one, because you've been playing the game for a while. I have as well. I was saying it is. I mean, it's weird the sort of pressure there. But how? I mean, do often find that people that don't play FPL or they don't really understand how big it is. Do you? You obviously know how big it is to be number one out of 10.8 million people. But do your friends and family around you, do they know the magnitude of what you're doing?
I think obviously it sounds impressive, but I think you only ever get the grasp of how hard it is when you actually play fantasy football yourself. And it's something I never thought would ever happen to me. I've always wanted to do well, but, you know, even if I'm first just for a week, I've got that now, and the pressure's on, I suppose, to keep it there. But no, obviously, the people I speak to, they're all aware of it, and the ones that do know are quite, you know, it's quite nice to chat to them about it. And then you get the ones that aren't football fans at all, and they're still backing me, of course, but they don't get it at all. It's one of them.
So I know you're speaking here to me, and I know you've been on a few other FPL-focused podcasts as well, but I often find as well that, I'm not sure where your local area is, but the local journalists on TV and radio and press tend to pick up on these things quite quickly. Have you had any nibbles there yet?
No, so I've not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy week. I got first on Thursday last week. Mm-hmm. At the end of that game week, and then it was a really short turnaround to the next one, and I was thinking I was only going to be first for like a couple of days, but I managed to hold on to it. Yeah. So no, I mean, it's been nice getting involved with the people on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I've taken to Twitter. I've because I've always read stuff on there, but I've never got involved. And I took to it on Thursday, and obviously it's gone really well, and I've enjoyed it. So
yeah, I bet.
That for me is quite a nice little aspect of the game.
I mean, I'm sure there's no shortage of people who want to get advice from you. And also, you say you look at Twitter, but don't sort of engage as much, but obviously use it for FPL. Is there anything else you use? Like, are you sort of a stats person at all, or are you just sort of go with your gut? Or,
well, I think first and foremost, it's always good to watch the games if you can, even if, you know, you're just watching the highlights. But I'm always, every week, I'm checking the stats from the games, whether it's shots on target, shots in the box, key passes. You know, I'm looking at those trends, and especially, obviously, seasonal trends. People keep up performances throughout the weeks, but current form as well. You know, you've got to take into account that a new role for a player might be discovered, or they might be playing out of position, or, you know, getting more set pieces, stuff like that. I'm always looking. Penalty takers, it's very important, because all it takes is one penalty and you've got points. So, yeah, I definitely look. Definitely part of it.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for chatting. Good luck with the game week. Good luck with staying number one. It'd be great to speak to you as the reigning champion afterwards, if you could dare dream that might be possible. But as you said, to be number one at the moment and to be number one for more than a week is an amazing achievement that very, very few people get. So you've still got at least that claim to fame. But good luck with everything, and see you soon.
Oh, thank you very much. Cheers.